Welcome to Long Live the Music, a podcast from It's All Dead, made by music fans for music fans. I'm Kyle Hawk. Welcome to Long Live the Music. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. I'm Kyle Hawk, editor-in-chief at itsalldead.com, and there's been a lot going on the past week in the world of music, and almost all of it revolves around one Taylor Swift. You know, I debated doing a podcast because it was last summer, just before Folklore came out, Kyle Schultz and I hopped on a podcast and we did the full album ranking, song ranking of Taylor Swift's career. And since that time, she's released two more albums, re-recorded two of her previous albums. She's been prolific to a degree that seems almost inhuman. And it was time to talk about it again, because frankly, if you listen to that previous episode we did, I believe for Kyle and I both, Red is the album of hers that we consider to be her best work. And so the Taylor's version of Red dropped just recently, and we've all had a chance to listen to it, and we wanted to react to it. So the aforementioned Kyle Schultz is on with me today, and Nadia Alves. Kyle, Nadia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey.
So the funny thing when I basically put out the bat signal or the skull signal, whatever our logo is for the to the team to talk about this, Nadia, I wasn't expecting. I mean, you've been texting me since Friday at least once every 15 minutes about Taylor Swift. And to be honest, I'm surprised, because I was under the impression that you were not a Taylor Swift fan. Now it seems like you're her biggest fan. Is it Red, the new version of Red, that's like tipped the scales? Like, what is it that's got you tumbling down the Taylor Swift rabbit hole recently?
It's immersion therapy. That's how I do my prep for these things, is I just...
But you didn't know we were doing a podcast. We're doing a podcast because I was so excited that you were so excited.
I don't know, man. There's something about it. I said, let's do this. I think it was the 10-minute version of All Too Well. I said, there's got to be something more to Red than, you know, than meets the eye.
Well, we're going to talk about All Too Well. We're going to talk about a little bit of everything with this. Before we jump into kind of our first reactions here, Kyle, like I mentioned, it's been like a year and a half since we did that huge Taylor Swift podcast, you and I. I mean, how do you feel coming into this next discussion? Because I feel like so much has happened with Taylor Swift that it like warrants a full, like, that we have to like dive back into this again. Like, doesn't it feel like that to you, that like an immense amount has happened? Like, if you're a Taylor Swift fan, even just Folklore itself, like what an impactful album that was, and then Evermore and everything that's happened, it just felt like there's a lot more to discuss now.
Honestly, I'm still kind of recovering from how much I loved Lover, and that was like 2 years ago, and it feels like it just came out. No, it's insane that she already put out two other albums of a completely different genre. She already did the first of her re-releases, and now there's Red, and it's really weird because, like, I've been looking forward to this re-release for a long time, and it's essentially the exact same album. Like, I don't know why I'm so excited to listen to something I've already heard before. I think it's just the fact that it's there again. Like, you already kind of know I'm going to love this when it comes out. And there's kind of the anticipation of, like, all the unreleased songs she's putting out for the first time. Like, it's mind-boggling that there's been so much content in less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's bonkers. And for somebody kind of at the height of their abilities as a songwriter, as a performer, as an artist, it's kind of incredible to see it play out in real time. And specifically with the re-release stuff, I mean, that's been talked about ad nauseum. We don't need to necessarily get into, like, the, you know, everything about the concept of, like, what she's doing here. She's doing it. And it's interesting no matter which angle you look at it from. Now, you know, you were talking about, like, why am I so excited? I've heard this album before. Well, as we've talked about, there's like a whole back half of album songs from the vault that we get with it. So that's one thing. But Kyle, you know, as I mentioned, Red is both of our favorite albums of hers. What was your experience listening to, like, just the re-recorded versions of those songs again? Like, was there anything that stuck out to you, or were you just like, okay, this is Red again, and I know this album well, and this is, you know, exactly what it was before.
It's really weird, honestly. Like, the thing that struck me out, struck out to me the most was just how familiar it was. Like, I was kind of hope, there's that little bit of hope in me, like, I know it's just a re-recording of her old music, but there's like that little bit of hope, like maybe, you know, kind of like the 10-minute version of All Too Well. Like maybe there's a little extra lyric or just something kind of hidden in there that I didn't notice, or like just a variation of instrumentation I didn't really notice. It was one of those weird catch-22s where like I was a little disappointed that it was exactly the same as I remember it for the most part. And at the same time, it just reaffirmed it's my favorite album she's ever put out. It reminded me why I fell in love with her in the first place. And even though I was still not the biggest fan of her country albums, and I wasn't a fan when she was releasing those, it still reminds me, like, I'm hoping she puts out another country album. At this point in her career, with the skill she has, and from taking a step away from it so long, like it feels good again to hear that.
Yeah. You know, I guess coming out of Fearless, I didn't have any expectation for like Red, the actual songs from it, that it was going to be anything other than kind of what she did before, like a complete, like true to the original songs version of it. And that's pretty much exactly what it was. And we can get into idiosyncrasies of like little, you know, production elements that might've been different, but ultimately, you know, it's, if you're listening to this and it's on in the background, you wouldn't know this is Red.
Yeah, that's a thing I kept coming in conflict with. I keep forgetting it's just a re-recording and not like a redo, like a lot of other bands do sometimes.
Right. Nadia, for you, what made this the album that kind of like sent you down the rabbit hole? Was there something specifically about, like, where were you when Red came out originally? What did it mean to you then versus what it means to you now? Like, where does all that stand?
So when Red came out, I was 15. And I'm constantly undating myself on this podcast by mentioning things like that. But yeah, so I was 15 when that came out. So I was really in my Fearless years, if we think about it. But yeah, I wasn't really a Taylor Swift fan at that point. I was kind of in my peak emo phase. So Taylor Swift was like not cool enough for me. But yeah, I kind of always liked Red when it came out. It's the album that has, out of her singles, those are all my favorite singles are from that album. And with Red, the re-recording, it's kind of about the hindsight. There's something about like listening to a 30-year-old woman recount these tales, and like, especially with songs like The Lucky One, where she's like talking about fame and the things that she doesn't realize are like slowly going to happen to her, and having her come back, you know, 9 years later and have to rehash those emotions again was very interesting for me to think about.
Yeah. And that's something we talked about, you know, with Fearless, the re-recording of that as well. There is something like really conceptually interesting about somebody going back in time and revisiting this work and revisiting those feelings. And, you know, Taylor Swift is obviously an artist that wears her heart on her sleeve. Like she writes, you know, about what she's going through, and she's very true to those emotions that she's feeling. And it's fascinating to think about her traveling back in time and imagining some of that again. You know, when we did the podcast before, Kyle, I'd mentioned my two favorite Taylor Swift songs are I Almost Do and Red, the title track from this album. And of course, you know, I was excited to hear those again. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the songs that on first listen, and I'm talking not about anything from the vault, but just the original track albums. Anything that stuck out to you where you were like, oh, that was interesting. And I know it's, you know, true to the original recordings, but I'll say that Everything Has Changed, the song with Ed Sheeran, is the one song on the album that I consistently skip. And I don't know, I'm not a big Ed Sheeran guy. I've never been a huge fan of that song for whatever reason, but the re-recording of this like actually caught my ear. Like it sounded much more like rich and raw. I don't know how to describe it, but it almost sounded like they were in the room together playing the song versus like the kind of full produced song as it originally existed. And that's the one that I was just so surprised at how much I enjoyed it, hearing it again now. Were there any songs for either of you on this that kind of stuck out in their re-recorded version?
Not particularly. I do agree with that. They're like, that's one of the songs I skipped a lot too. Everything Has Changed. Just never listened to it that much. And for whatever reason, I've listened to it probably more this last weekend than I have in the last 10 years. I don't know what it is. It could just be it's, you know, two master songwriters just, they've had that much longer to just get better at what they do, and they just meld that much better. I can't really say I have anything that really stuck out to me song-wise like that, but just the production aspect of it, I've noticed the background instrumentation a lot more, and there's like a real fullness and richness to a lot of the songs that I'd never really noticed before. And then I went back and listened to the original recordings, and there's like violin in some of the songs and stuff like that that has always been there, but I just have never noticed it. And I'm finally just now hearing it for the first time, and it's really kind of put things in a new perspective on just how much went into these songs.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got an ear for music, there are things that you're going to hear pop out just because, like, there's different, you know, one, they're re-recorded, they're produced differently, they're mixed differently. There's certain instruments that are going to come out more in the mix than they did before. If you really want to listen, you're going to find fun little nuggets like that. Nadia, for you, what are some of the songs on the album that not only stand out to you, like, in the time this album has existed, but just in this new version of it? Are there certain songs that you find yourself kind of going back to over and over?
Yeah. What's funny is you guys mentioned Everything Has Changed as like the one you kind of passed by. That's always been one of my favorite songs. I think that's because I kind of grew up on Ed Sheeran. My brother did a lot of like the music discovery in our family, and every once in a while he would throw something on in the kitchen. And we all like really got into Ed Sheeran for a few years. And so when she did that song with him, I was like, oh, Ed Sheeran, like, of course. So I always liked that one. It's always been one of my favorites of hers, like across her discography. But yeah, I guess I would say for me, it's just the like maturity in her voice. I listened to both of them back to back, and you really can hear how much older she sounds. And like her vocal intonations have changed, and she's just got like such a fine-tuned quality to her voice that she didn't before. And it's just so interesting to see like how she's changed in that way.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the songs from this album that over the course of time, I mean, obviously there's all the big singles, right? Like Never Ever Getting Back Together and I Knew You Were Trouble. There's a lot of songs from this album that just like everybody knows that it had some really huge singles on it. And of course, All Too Well. And we're going to, here in a few minutes, we're going to talk about All Too Well quite a bit. So I'm going to, we're going to hold that back for just a minute. But this truly is a great album, and that there's really not any weak songs at all on it. You know, when we did the other Taylor Swift pod mention, I Almost Do is my favorite song of hers. I feel like nobody ever talks about it. It blows my mind. It's such an incredible, incredible song. That one sticks out. And when I think about like unsung songs from Red, but one of the things I've also been thinking about this, this weekend and into this week, Starlight is an album or a song that also I very rarely hear people talk about. It's tucked away near the end of the album. It's got a much more bright and hopeful feel to it as that album kind of like comes towards its close than some of the songs previous to it. It is such a beautiful, like I almost get choked up listening to it now. And I don't even know if I can really explain it, but like, again, I've never had a conversation with anybody about Starlight, but that song is fucking good. Or for either of you, are there songs that you feel like on this album or like they could have easily been huge singles, or they're incredible songs, you just don't hear people give them the time of day as much as maybe some of the others?
I agree with Starlight. That's always been one of my absolute favorites from it. I can't remember if there are singles. I know they come up from time to time, but State of Grace and Holy Ground are possibly my two favorite songs of hers ever. I know Holy Ground I don't hear too much about, but also as cheesy as it is, Stay, Stay, Stay is one of my favorites because it's just, yep, it's so corny, that. But it's just fun.
Yeah, I think about you every time that song comes on just because
you're welcome.
I know how much you love it. Nadia, what about you?
Yeah, I also really love I Almost Do, like you do. But my other favorite is Begin Again. I think it was the visual that went along with that song, that video that she put out, is still one of my favorite music videos ever. I love that like dress that she's sitting on like the top of the building. It's like peak romantic Taylor Swift. So those are my two favorites.
Well, you know, for all of the incredible songs on this album, the one that has been the center of conversation, even I feel like more than the album itself, these past few days, is All Too Well. And I don't know why, but I don't think I saw this coming. Like I don't think I knew how, you know, and again, on the podcast we did last year, we talked a little bit briefly about All Too Well kind of being considered critically her best, the best song that she's written, or there's an argument to be made for it. I don't think I realized like the groundswell of like intensity that the fan base had for this particular song until Friday came around. And literally all weekend long, all anybody can talk about is All Too Well. Now, of course, she put out the original, like the 10-minute version of it. The story goes, the song was originally 10 minutes long. She and a co-writer were able to like pare it down to the 5-minute version that we all know. So there's the 10-minute version now that was part of this release that's now out there. She did a short film for the song. She performed the song on SNL. Like, it's been the centerpiece of that everything is like revolving around right now. Kyle, did that surprise you too? Because I just felt like, I was like, dang, I knew this song was great, but I didn't realize like the entire world was like waiting to have this moment to like fall in love again with All Too Well.
Yeah, no, I was kind of in the same boat. Like I've always loved the song. Like, I know it's one of her most popular and stuff. And like, I'd never really looked too much in the history of it. Like, it's one of those things, like you kind of look, it's like, oh, this is who people think it's written about and stuff like that. And then when I finally saw the track listing and saw the 10-minute version, I just kind of stopped and went, oh no, this is going to be devastating. I think it's also part of the fact that with the track listing, you saw that there and you just knew that's going to be something, because it's such a familiar song, and to extend it by you know, doubling the time, there's going to be something new to it. There's going to be more to it. And so I think there is a bit of anticipation that possibly a lot of people didn't even know they really had going into that. And then there's also, you know, the surprise release of like the short film she made for it, which had like, I think, 25 million views in under 24 hours. And, you know, it's just so much happened around it so fast that it caught everyone off guard, I think, anyway. And then once it was there, it was as powerful as you kind of expected it to be, even though you've been listening to it for all this time.
Yeah, for sure. Nadia, real quick, what was your relationship with All Too Well coming into this? Because this is the song that you've been talking the most about with me. I mean, just like everybody, we're all talking about the song, but what was it about you this time around that kind of hooked you?
I have no idea. I have no clue. When it came out, that was the first one I listened to. I have a 5-minute drive to work. I couldn't even make it through the whole song. I had to like pause it and hang out in the parking lot for a few minutes. And I was like, oh, I guess I'd better go in for my shift. And then I came back and listened to the new half of All Too Well at 5 p.m. And I was like, that's a fun one. But yeah, like, again, not really listening to Red too much, like when it was in its heyday. But yeah, All Too Well is definitely one of those songs. And for the 10-minute version, like to now exist, and I mean not exist, like exist publicly. I don't know. There's something about it. Jeremiah and I were listening to it in the car last night, and like as soon as it started, I was like, "Whew, oh boy!" And he goes, "Are you crying already?" And I was like, "No, I'm good. I'm good." But it was quite the emotional roller coaster.
I think part of it is it's already a devastating song emotionally, and the bits that are added are just the intense details of just that heartbreak of it, of like, you know, you've still got my scarf and sitting at the door and just all these little figments of it that make the story so precise. Like it's something where you can visualize it so well. Like it's crazy.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, the song's already pretty in its original form a longer song, you know, like it's a 5-minute plus long song. When you hear like, oh, there's going to be a 10-minute version of it, like, you know, people don't just generally go out of their way to listen to 10-minute long songs, you know, unless you're in pop music specifically, right? So So the thing is, like, oh, the 10-minute version is going to be like a less good version of All Too Well. You could like actually argue that the 10-minute version might actually be better than the original version. Like, it doesn't feel like you're having to sit through 10 minutes of something that you don't want to. Like, it's really, really captivating for 10 full minutes. You mentioned the new stuff that was added in. I mean, one of my personal favorite parts, it's near the end of the fourth verse where she says, you who charmed my dad with self-effacing jokes, sipping coffee like you're on a late night show. But then he watched me watch the front door all night, willing you to come. And he said, it's supposed to be fun turning 21. I mean, goddamn, like the visual of that, like the painting of that picture is so vivid and so brutal. And that's kind of what you're talking about, Kyle, but it's like 10 minutes of that, where now like this already beautiful song has like even more detail within it. That's like adding more to the picture. I just think it's incredible what this turned out to be.
Well, not even that, but just the fact that those few verses added to it almost a decade later, and it still has that much power behind it. Like, you'd almost expect it to, you know, it fits with the song, but after all this time, it kind of sounds, you know, a little cheesy. Like, how do you make a sad song even sadder? And but somehow, like, the energy behind it just... It's palpable.
Yeah, absolutely. Nadia, was there anything specific about this newer version that has kind of stuck with you?
Yeah, and it's for me, it's when you listen to the one, like when you're listening to the whole album, and then obviously that one's tacked on to the end of the project, and how unfinished the 5-minute version sounds now, like already after just having it for a couple of days, like that, those last couple of verses were always meant to be there. And it's just kind of a bummer that she wasn't able to put that out at that time. But you also wonder, like, I watched Miss Americana the other night, and it was like, talking about her struggles with fame and how she's had to deal with like the media storm over the years. And you wonder if it was almost better that she had cut it down. Because like at 22, like, would she have had the, like, I don't want to say like the mental energy, but like the maturity and the, like, self-confidence to face whatever would have happened if she had released all 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And, you know, when we go back to Taylor Swift in 2012 and where, you know, a certain sect of the populace was, I mean, she at this point has, like, cemented herself as such a artistic force that it's kind of undeniable. There's still the naysayers. But in 2012, I think there was still kind of a vocal sect that would have, like, really kind of gone after her for putting out a 10-minute song like this. Like, if this came out in 2012, I think the reaction to it is different than what it is now, and how we have grown in terms of our approach, our reaction, our thoughts around someone like Taylor Swift. Maybe I'm completely off there, but I just feel like, you know, she faced a lot of stuff that we've talked about so much on this podcast, of just like women and music, women in society in general. But like, I think 2012 Taylor Swift, the 10-minute version of All Too Well, like, probably wouldn't have been like the celebration that it's been these past few days. It may have been nothing at all. Definitely. Or it may have been people being like, oh brother, 10 minutes of this,
and
give
also
me a break, you know.
It's Red was her first foray into pop music, so to like write a 10-minute song like that is kind of a very country move. So I feel like it would have been kind of misplaced at that point too. Especially as she was trying to kind of move away from, you know, the country stations and move over to, you know, top 40.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like the 2012, 2013, like, that's kind of at the height when the media was kind of, targeting her, and it was, you know, before Reputation, when she was kind of fighting back and everything. But, I feel like putting out a 10-minute version of that, like, as great as it is now, it may have just been looked at as like, oh, she's just trying to get gossip. Like, it's one of those things, like, oh, she's going for attention. Look who I've been doing. And that's how it may have been perceived by at least the media, maybe at the time. And I feel like at this point, that's no longer the case, or at least not nearly as much.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. Kyle, you were implying the kind of the story behind the song. And I, like you, I was like, oh, yeah, I think this is about Jake Gyllenhaal or whatever. The amount of like... The amount of like digging that people have done over the years around the song, like, astounded. Like, I didn't realize there were like sleuths out there, like, tracking down every detail of this. And apparently over the weekend, somebody came forward that they have the scarf or whatever. I don't know if either of you have heard this, but like,
that's definitely not real.
I have not.
I think it's real. And I was talking about it with somebody today too. There's like I'm not smart enough to explain it all, but there's basically like a site out there that gets to the bottom of these things, and the validated actual scarf has been validated as being in the possession of someone.
They better send it back to her.
Wow. I know there's a sect of Swifty detectives who have the prowess skills that I can only hope to achieve in my lifetime.
Yeah.
No kidding. I just want to say I watched a TikTok because that's what I do to prepare for podcasts. And the TikTok, unfortunately, I don't have the creator. Sorry. But it was a picture of Jake Gyllenhaal wearing the scarf. There was a picture of him and Taylor. She was wearing the scarf. And then there was the next one where he was just wearing it purportedly after the breakup, I would assume. And okay. That picture of the scarf on Jake Gyllenhaal without Taylor Swift was taken November 12th, 2010, which means it's almost exactly a decade to the release of All Too Well 10 Minutes.
Insane.
And that's why I have people do my detective work for me.
And that's what's crazy about this song, because that one little detail has inspired, you know, just an obsession of something that happened 10 years ago. And you're just like, I can't believe how accurate every small thing in the song is. And it's one of those things where, like, I know her lyrics have always been, you know, very on her sleeve and stuff like that, but it makes me curious how many other just small details are in songs that I've never once picked up on, that if you go back and see a photo from 2008 or something, you can just be like, oh, that's it. That's what she's talking about.
Well, yeah. And how many like digs at people that the songs may have been written about or for that like nobody would get but them.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
It has to suck. It has to be horrible hearing a song that Taylor's written has become a global phenomenon, and you're sitting at home like, oh no, that's about me.
You know what? Jake Gyllenhaal doesn't shower. Okay, so if that is about him, that's the least of his worries.
That's fair.
Nadia,
yes.
Nadia, talk to us about the short film, because I know you had some thoughts on this. I thought it was fine. I enjoyed it for what it was. It didn't like change my life or anything.
I quite like the short film.
Yeah, tell me your thoughts on it.
Yeah, so let me pull up my my pin board with the strings. No, I'm just kidding. It's just a note in my phone. But the casting of Sadie Sink and Dylan O'Brien, which is like that juxtaposition of the two actors. They're the same age as Jake, allegedly. All right, because this is like true crime, we have to say allegedly. You know, Jake and Taylor were when they dated. And the idea of Jake Gyllenhaal having a fully fledged adult career and Taylor Swift still being in like her teeny bopper phase when they were dating, and like just that maturity that comes with being in the public eye for longer. And that's the exact same thing that Dylan O'Brien and Sadie Sink have right now, which is such an interesting choice that she made. And I know she did it on purpose because she doesn't do anything by accident. But yeah, like Dylan O'Brien is fully fledged adult career out of his teen phase. Was he in Teen Wolf? I can't remember what he was in. But he was in some teen show. Oh my gosh, this is not a me thing. Okay, this is an us thing. Anyway, whatever Dylan O'Brien was in was like a teen show. And then now he's moved on to, you know, film and stuff like that. But Sadie Sink is still kind of in the Stranger Things universe. We kind of still see her as like a child actress. And it's just kind of an interesting choice. Like the fact that the comments are, it's so gross to see these two people making out, because it should be, because a 19-year-old and a 30-year-old should not be making out. Like, is just, she's a genius. All right. She's a genius. She knows how to use not just music, but like visuals, fashion, to tell the fuller story of like what's going on. She's incredible. She's got like this incredible universe going on. And it's not that I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. I don't know. She was never like really my thing, but you can't deny that she's a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, the film itself is just really well, I mean, obviously she was involved in directing it, and, kind of the whole project from start to finish, and it's really beautifully done. I actually enjoyed it more as a playing in the background as a companion piece to her SNL performance. I thought that was like a really unique way to kind of display it. I want to talk now about some of the songs from the vault on this one. I actually enjoyed these from the vault songs more than I enjoyed the ones on Fearless, I think, by and large. I mean, they're not everyone knocks it out of the park, but there's some really good stuff on here. The two that stuck out to me the most, Nothing New with Phoebe Bridgers. I was always going to like that. Like, you know, Taylor Swift and Phoebe Bridgers on a song together is just kind of like in my wheelhouse. So I really loved hearing that collaboration. It's so cool. Like I never, if you would have told me a couple years ago that Phoebe Bridgers was going to do a song with Taylor Swift, I wouldn't have believed you. I don't know who would have, but it's so cool to see that. And then Message in a Bottle. I've been throwing this idea out to a few people. That sounds like a Carly Rae Jepsen song to me. Like straight up, you listen to it and it's like, oh, I can totally hear Carly Rae on this. And 1989 and Emotion coming out kind of, you know, semi near each other and kind of capturing that same sort of aesthetic. How cool would it be if for From the Vault for 1989, Carly Rae brought or Taylor brought Carly Rae on one of the songs? Cause after hearing that, I can totally see it happening now. And I'm giddy just thinking about the mere idea of something like that taking place. But Kyle, what were your, From the Vault thoughts?
No, I agree. I really like this batch a lot more than the Fearless ones. The Fearless songs are good, but I don't remember any of them and it's only been a few months. But no, I like this one. This bit actually felt a bit more cohesive overall. I think my favorite was I Bet You Think About Me with Chris Stapleton. Mm. I just really like that combination of voices with them. And yeah. It's weird because the Fearless songs, I enjoyed them, but I could tell, you know, why they hadn't been included on a proper album. They were there. It was nice to listen to, but I don't visit them that often. This batch, it's weird because you can hear that transition in it. There's a nice mix of like country influence in it. You can also hear like some of the beginning, the dabbling phases of what kind of sounds like her trying to explore the sound of like Folklore or Evermore and just kind of touching into it, but not going full in, and just kind of like dabbling in the poppier elements that would appear on like 1989 or something, or the pop elements of it are watered down a bit. It sounds kind of like Lover, where it was kind of more subtle. Like it was a very interesting mix of stuff that it's not polished as well. It's not, it doesn't go full tilt like most of her songs do, but just the exploration in it, is something way more valuable, I think. And it actually sounds like almost a full second album if you kind of really get into it.
I agree. Nadia, what about you?
It's all been said. don't laugh at me. No, same thing. Like I really liked these vault songs the same, like better than I liked the Fearless ones. And I don't actually know why that is. Maybe it's because I listened to them so much. I had no choice. But yeah, again, it's really just, like that idea of her coming into her own as a pop artist with Red that I really appreciate. And these vault songs kind of just show that she was on that path, like I think a lot earlier than any of us expected. So the fact that the songs that we did get on Red like are the final polished versions of what she was aiming towards, the fact that we still have a little bit of that like younger Taylor who is still trying to find her way was nice to see.
Yeah, for sure.
No, it kind of cements the fact that it always sounded like Red was the transition album between genres, and you can see that, but these vault songs really kind of put that clear into focus where you can see not just the transition from country to pop, but the transition from country to indie or from pop to indie or kind of everything in between. Like there is one song I can't remember which one it is right now. My apologies. I should be able to recall that, but it almost sounds like Rilo Kiley singing it. It's just one of those things where it's so kind of off brand where it just sticks out and you just, I never quite realized she was experimenting with sound that much for that long.
Yeah. Well, I've got down here to talk about our favorite Easter eggs from Red Era Taylor. I mean, we've kind of been doing that with the All Too Well stuff. And I think, Nadia, you've got some stuff to dig into here. But this isn't an Easter egg at all, but it was something I was thinking back of, like, you know, it's like, oh, 2012 wasn't that long ago, you know, like it's 9 years ago. But a lot has changed. And one of the things that I remember from when this album came out, and I still remember it because I made a joke tweet about it back then, and I see it every year come up on Time Hop. But when this album came out, there was a promotion with Pizza Hut, where you could order a pizza online and the CD, and they would deliver the pizza and the red CD to your door, which is obviously something that would never happen now because people don't even buy CDs 9 years later. But I think about that more than I should, about like how many people experienced this for this album for the first time while eating a pan pizza from Pizza Hut or something.
But no, it's like the red sauce. Don't you get it? It'll be. I'm sorry, we're getting divorced. I apologize.
Nadia, you are our resident sleuth and investigator these past few days.
I'm not a sleuth, okay? I'm just an interested party.
You are very interested, and I know you have interesting things to share.
I don't know why I'm so interested. I don't know what it was that made me say, Taylor Swift now for me. That's all. Thank you.
It's the magic of red. It's red magic.
It really is. Okay, it really is. It makes me, like, her fashion in that era was, like, so Mumford & Sons. There was just really something about it, all right? 22, that's what I was excited for. I didn't even have a fun 21st birthday. Like, 22 is what I waited for because I got it's with my Taylor Swift year. I was finally able to appreciate it. It took me that long, which is a shame.
Very nice. Speaking of that was the only song in the album that I felt weird listening to. Because even when it came out, I was older than 22. I forget. Numbers aren't real. I don't remember ages. but even then, like, when it came out, just listening to it, I was like, there's something uncomfortable about it. And even now, like, I appreciate the song, but knowing she's, 30 and singing it, it's kind of like, that's a really good single that doesn't age well. And I can see that kind of being slowly dropped from, like, her live shows because it doesn't have the same impact.
Well, look, here's your first Easter egg. All right. First of all, I still love it. Here's your first Easter egg. Okay. She put 22 after All Too Well on the album because her 21st birthday was so bad.
Yeah.
Think about
that
it.
That makes sense.
That is very fair. And,
think about it.
You are the resident sleuth.
And say sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Taylor Swift, I'm so sorry. I knocked your song about having a good birthday. All right. It's because
you don't write an angry song about me. I can't take that.
It's because you've never been a woman turning 22. I don't know what it is. All right. There's something about it, man.
That's fair.
Listen, it was a fun time. Anyway, gosh, this is going downhill. So my next Easter egg is the fact that the All Too Well 10 minute does have 13 seconds at the end of it. I don't know if it's quite dead space. I don't think it is because she kind of faded it out. But that was an interesting touch to me because in a song where you're reclaiming the fact that you were fully present in a gaslighting relationship by tacking on that extra, like, bam, Taylor Swift touch, 13 seconds, my favorite number. Like, it's just an extra. This is my song. This is my story, you know, and I really appreciated that. She's so calculated. And I say that in the absolute best way. I don't mean that. People have used, like, oh, Taylor Swift is manipulative. Oh, Taylor Swift is calculated with the things that she does. Like, she's an artist. There's nothing wrong with planning ahead, right?
This is so funny to me to hear Nadia so fired up. I've got the receipt. I've got text messages from the past. With Nadia,
read them off, dude.
A Taylor Swift fan, and I'm just, like, so overjoyed at how into this you are now.
I don't know. There's just something about it. I just really went for it. And then, of course, there's the Easter eggs from which next album that she's going to put out. from like a re-recording perspective, which we can definitely talk about another time, I guess.
Well, let's talk about it right now.
I don't know if you wanted to go there yet. All right.
I do want to go there.
She's doing them all.
You know, it was interesting because a while back, it was like near the end of the summer, she put out Wildest Dreams randomly, the re-recorded version of that. I don't know if either of you remember that, but it was just like a day. All of a sudden, there was a Friday. And I was like, oh, this is the re-recorded version of Wildest Dreams. And it's like, why would you have been working on that if you weren't doing 1989 next, I guess, is my where my brain went. And I think a lot of people's did. And I know that I've seen people talking about like all the people that are out there like trying to put the pieces together. It seems like 1989 is probably the one that's coming next, which I'm fine with. But yeah, I have no, I don't know.
I have a theory that they're all re-recorded and she's just waiting to release them so she can hang out with us and mess with us a little bit.
It you does know, that's seem like one of those things where she's so anxious to get her songs back. I would almost assume she's done all the work and is either just kind of fine-tuning bits and pieces or just taking her time to make sure it's like, you don't want to have like, hey, I know I've released 5 albums in the last year and a half. Here's another 5.
So what I was going to ask about this is like just in general, how we're feeling about the whole Taylor's Version project, 2 albums in now. When it came out that she was doing this, I think people were like happy for her to do this and you know, get ownership back of her songs. But it also kind of felt like, man, like, what's this going to even be? And then when Fearless came out, it was positive reception to it. But it was kind of that, at least for me, I was like, are people cool with like this happening 7 times or however many albums it is at this point? And the response to Red, I mean, you know, whatever it was on Friday, like the top 20 songs streamed, like the basically the entire thing was like the top string songs of this weekend were all Taylor Swift from Red. I mean, there was an even bigger just explosion of excitement about this one than there was over Fearless. So I'm kind of like, I just feel like this is going to be a thing for like at least the next couple years where like people are still going to get amped up for this.
It's one of those things when the project was first announced, I feel like there was almost, you know, the fan base was excited, but I feel like overall people are kind of like, you're just re-releasing albums we've already listened to. Like it on a surface level, it almost sounds kind of like, you know, just a money grab, but it's one of those things where the re-releases, there's a newfound maturity and familiarity with the music that wasn't there the first time they came out. There's something, you know, she's had a decade or so to really sit with these songs to just have it there to tighten it up a little bit. Something that even while writing them, the production couldn't do. You know, it's something that just makes it a little bit cleaner. But also just having had that this entire time and then going back and hearing her in a more mature mindset and voice, rediscovering them, it, even though you may have heard these songs 1,000 times before, there's something brand new in hearing like that minor tweak in vocals or like the notes kind of hitting where it's just, it almost pulls a different emotion from it, even though it's the exact same thing. And then on top of that, hearing from the vault, and stuff that was recorded around the same time, there's so much more kind of exploration around these albums that if she just put out an EP with those songs, like it'd be well received, it'd go really good, but it wouldn't have the same impact as like hearing what didn't make the album, hearing what she was thinking about at the time that didn't make the cut. And it kind of like, I know My Chemical Romance has put out a bunch of like B-side EPs that no one listens to, no one talks about. And a lot of them are good songs, but it's just, they don't have that same impact. And this is a guaranteed way to make sure that those, kind of relics from that time period, not only are heard, but there's a straightforward emotion that goes with those that carries the same impact as the album itself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Nadia, for you, it feels like this has been something that's sort of reignited or set ablaze kind of an interest in diving into her discography.
I don't know. I didn't really feel that way about Fearless. I don't know what it is about Red. Something in me said, this is the one to watch. anyway. So I'm definitely excited for her to have these re-recordings. And it's not even for us, like as listeners or as people who have, you know, partaken in her art over the years. But it really is for her. Like, it really is an ongoing conversation about, like, who owns the music that you write? She writes a song at 13. Like, how is she supposed to know, signing that record deal, like, that this was – I don't know. It's just – I think she deserves to have her art back, and she deserves to, you know, release it as she sees fit. But, yeah, so I am definitely looking forward to the rest of them. Simply for that reason, I think that I – probably will get tired of hearing the same album over and over. But that's just me. But I am definitely interested in the Vault songs. I think that those will be definitely something to keep looking forward to. But I was watching, and don't laugh at me, I was watching the Seth Meyers interview she did the other day before we started recording. And she was talking about, oh no, now I lost my train of thought. She was talking about, like, the emotions of, you know, re-recording Red and going back into this time in her life that was so tumultuous for her. And she was talking about the Vault songs and how she had wanted all these songs on the album and she was so excited about all of them, but they just didn't all fit onto the album. And so she said, she literally said exactly what you said, Kyle. I could have released them, you know, one off and said, you know, these were supposed to be for Red. And she said, but I decided to leave them in that time. And so the fact that she can now come back and re-release them together, like with the vibe that they were originally supposed to fit with, is, I think, is like a real reward for her.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of, you know, the remaining albums, the one I think I might be the most interested in is kind of surprising, but I think Reputation is the one that I'm most interested. Just because that was like her most divisive album. And I have no reason to believe she would do this. She's given us no reason to believe that. But how interesting would it be if, like, all of those, she redid those songs, but they were, like, fully stripped down to parts? Because one of the things I've talked about that's so amazing about her as a songwriter is, like, you hear the song on the album, but then when you hear it, like, acoustic, you just hear, like, the bare bones versions of, like, the song she writes. And she did this. It was one of the songs on Lover that she performed a Tiny Desk performance of it. Oh, Death by a Thousand Cuts. And just hearing it as an acoustic song, I was like, holy shit, this is just amazing songwriting. How crazy would it be to hear like an acoustic version of like Reputation or something? Not going to happen. No reason to believe it would, but it will be interesting to see what she decides to explore with that one.
Well, on this, there was a acoustic version of State of Grace, so it's not out of out of the realm of possibility for something like that to occur. No, I would agree with that. I think honestly, I can't remember all the albums she still has left to do. I forgot Reputation was a part of this. But I honestly, I'm more interested in hearing, Speak Now. Was that the title of it?
Yep.
That and her debut, Taylor Swift, those are songs that are so far back in her history and the early songwriting aspect of it. As much as I enjoy Reputation now, I wasn't as sold on it when it came out, but I like it more in retrospect. As much as I enjoy 1989, I'm more curious to hear her updated takes on these songs, the first, you know, batch of songs she wrote, because those are the two albums I've listened to the least. I'm the least familiar with them. And just kind of all that to go back into that mindset to find like those first recordings, those first hits, and going into those, I'm so curious if like the magic that kind of really started her career is still going to be found in those. And like from the Vault, are those songs still going to be interesting? Are they still going to be fun to listen to? Is there going to be like new meaning behind these songs from back then that hadn't quite hit their the peak of songwriting she has now? I'm curious how that's going to play out. And I'm honestly more excited to hear that because it's one of those things that even though they are so early in her career, I feel like coming out as they are now, it's going to inspire like a whole new like anticipation of hearing that type of thing, hoping to discover the same secrets that we have like with Red.
Yeah, for sure. I just had a really fun idea. What if like she went on tour and each night she was going to play an album from her discography in full, but you didn't know until you got to the concert, like, which album it was going to be. Anyway,
that would be awesome. And that's also a guaranteed way to get me to spend like $3,000 in a week on concert tickets. It's such an ingenious, brutal plan. I can't believe no one else has come up with this.
Maybe she'll hear that and she'll do it.
Yeah. Taylor, if you're listening,
we know you are.
Send me an email, hawk@itsalldead.com. Follow me on Twitter, Kyle Hawk, Taylor Swift, please. All right. Well, anything else we're missing from this conversation? Did we cover it all?
Yes, I wanted to talk about Reputation.
Okay. Please. Do it.
Reputation is one I've never actually listened to all the way through. And it's funny that you should mention it. Because, no, it's not going to be an Easter egg. I'm just catching my breath. Because she was so up in arms about that album. So I wonder if the Vault songs will be the softer side of her that she was kind of struggling with at that point that she didn't want to put on the album because, oh no, Taylor's putting her guard down. Now she's a cute little country star again. She had to like keep up the Reputation facade of like, oh my gosh, Kim and Kanye suck, which they do. But yeah, I don't know. I think that'll be an interesting batch of Vault songs as well. That's all I had to say. Thank you.
Yep, I agree. Well, folks, this has been fun. Thank you both for jumping on the mic tonight to talk about Taylor Swift. Just when we think we're done talking about Taylor Swift, there's more to discuss, and I'm sure this won't be the last time either. So, Kyle, Nadia, thank you both for chatting it up tonight.
Thank you.
Anytime.
All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Long Live the Music. If you like us, subscribe to the podcast or your favorite podcast app. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, come visit us. itsalldead.com. Folks, we are getting real close to end of the year lists. They are coming. It's going to be fun. Follow us along for the journey. That's going to do it for this episode of Long Live the Music. I'm Kyle Hawk, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening to Long Live the Music. If you like our show, come find us on Twitter and Facebook @itsalldead. And of course, come visit our website, itsalldead.com.